You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, the podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, can you have OCD without the C? I am your host, Noah Laracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. So as our journey into the world of OCD continues, today we're going to talk about the infamous pure O. So why don't you tell us what a pure O form of OCD is?
Well, pure O, that term is actually a misnomer. And if you are unfamiliar with obsessive compulsive disorder, it's easy to think that a person can suffer from just obsessions and not compulsions. And the reality is that most people who have pure O actually also have compulsions, except the compulsions are not overt behaviors. They are mental compulsions, which may not be visible. In order to understand pure O, we have to go back to that vicious cycle of OCD and really understand the function of it. So remember that obsessions are these intrusive thoughts, sensations, images that come into your mind against your will. You have no control over them. And naturally so, they trigger anxiety and discomfort. And compulsions are the things that we do in order to get rid of the discomfort, in order to gain relief, right? So anything that you do for the purpose of gaining relief is a compulsion. Just because a behavior is not overt, such as washing or checking, it doesn't mean that you don't have compulsions. Compulsions often occurs mentally.
To circle back here a little bit, I think the idea was that 10, 15 years ago, they started noticing that people could have OCD-like symptoms without the compulsions, right? And they sort of labeled them pure O's. Mm-hmm. However, the new understanding is that they actually do have compulsions. We just can't see them, right?
Exactly. So a person who has pure O still has compulsions. And unless you are trained to work with people with OCD, unless you have OCD where it's a form of pure O, it might seem uncommon or it might seem like it's not really a compulsion. However, in pure O, the compulsions occur mentally. Now, it can be as easy as something as praying or mentally counting or even mentally checking. However, true pure O, people with true pure O engage in a lot of mental checking, mental reassurance seeking, mental rationalization and intellectualization in order to answer questions of uncertainty that brings on doubt, which is what OCD thrives on.
Okay, so in traditional OCD, someone, they feel like maybe they left the burner on, so they would actually go and check physically to go check to see whether it was on. And a pure OCD, they're going to have some sort of a thought, right, that's going to occur. And they're going to go check, but it's only going to occur in their head. They're going to sort of check whether the thought is true.
You can say that, except that is still mental checking for something that is external. So, for example, you're still mentally checking whether something is safe or unsafe externally, right? So that's still not all in your head. A person with true pure O, they're like philosophers. If you have ever taken a philosophy course or read a book on philosophy, then you would be very familiar with how philosophy works, right? Ask a question, and then you ask more questions in order to answer your initial question. And this is in essence what a pure O is. The pure O person has a question. The question is uncertain and there really isn't an answer to it. So for example, am I good? Well, there are many variables that can determine whether you're good or not, right? And you can ask 10 million questions of whether you're good or not, and you still won't arrive at an absolute answer of whether you are good or not. Perhaps you're good in this moment. However, you weren't in the previous moment, right? Or you were good yesterday, and you're not going to be good tomorrow, right? And then also, what in the world does the word good mean inherently? So because there's not a black and white answer to that, the person with pure O is never satisfied. And they will consistently seek reassurance, find evidence to support whether they're good or not good. And this mental debate keeps going on and on and on and on that fuels and drives that initial question, the initial obsession, which is, am I good?
How about when someone says to themselves in their head, everything's going to be okay? Everything's going to be okay.
Well, everything is going to be okay is a reassurance, right? Now, those reassurances happen as commonly with people with pure O as well as people with other mental compulsions. So if a person is afraid of flying, afraid of height, afraid of being stuck in enclosed spaces, that person might reassure themselves and say, everything's going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay. However, is that a pure O? Not exactly, because they're reassuring something that is external, something that is tangible. Whereas the person with pure O, that fear is very much intangible. So that person might ask, am I a decent person? Am I a moral person? I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. And that is what a pure O does. A pure O will have these intangible philosophical questions that has no answers, and they will try to answer their own questions. They will rationalize through their thoughts to find evidence for and against their answer. And then they will reassure themselves by saying things like, well, I'm still going to be okay. I'm still going to be okay. I'll still be a decent person. And then the next minute it'll go to, well, how do I know I'm going to be a decent person? How do I know I have been a decent person? Maybe when I got upset yesterday, that meant I wasn't a decent person. Let me ask other people. And the rumination feeds off itself and spins out of control like a tornado.
So it's like having a dialogue with yourself that goes on forever.
Yes.
Never ends.
Yes. It's like, you know how those cartoons are? You have the angel and the devil on your shoulders. Well, it's pretty much like that. You have these questions, and then you've got the angel and the devil talking to each other, trying to outsmart the other person or the other thing. And that's essentially what a pure O does. Now, why are these considered compulsions? Well, because in essence, by rationalizing and just the attempt to answer your question serves as an attempt to gain relief. And because it is something that you're doing to gain relief, that in itself is a compulsive behavior.
So I want to unpack this a little bit, because one thing I hear people doing a lot is they like to say, well, when I have a negative thought, I just replace it with a positive one. Right,
mm-hmm.
I try to, and so I have my little positive thoughts that I'll stick in there when something bad comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be considered a compulsion?
Well, I think it depends, right? Because again, we have to keep in mind that we all engage in some sort of compulsions, right? The question is, does it interfere with your functioning? Right. So if you remember back in, I don't know, maybe the first episode, we talked about OCD as being on the continuum. From those people who are completely meticulous and everything has to be a certain way and it interferes with your life, to those people on the other end of the spectrum where it doesn't matter, right? And it doesn't interfere with your life. Most of us are somewhere in between. So to answer your question, Does replacing your negative thought with a positive thought interfere with your functioning? If you are consistently doing that, so for example, for every negative thought you have, you feel the urge to replace it with a positive thought. And if you can't move forward with your daily activities without having replaced that negative thought with a positive one, then yes, it's a bit compulsive. That means that it interferes with your life. However, let's say you have some random negative thought and you're thinking, oh, well, what the heck was that? Oh, that's just not realistic. The reality is, I'm going to be okay. And that thought never comes back up and you don't go back and worry about having had that thought, then that's not really OCD.
So then how does pure O tend to show up and have that significant impairment in functioning? In other words, what's the usual way that it interferes with someone's life?
Well, it interferes with someone's life because that person literally is stuck in their heads, that they cannot move forward, that they cannot do anything, that they are literally in the meeting and can't focus on the meeting because internally they're having that dialogue in their heads. They have that devil and the angel on their shoulders communicating with each other, trying to figure out the solution to this question, to this uncertainty, and they're not able to absorb anything else from the environment. So they're not really functioning.
Now, I would also imagine that hearing that in your head all the time, would it ever get so exhausting that you might become irritable?
Yes, that is no different than having to do a physical compulsion such as cleaning or washing or checking or ordering and arranging. It's no different. In fact, having to do mental compulsions might be a little bit more exhaustive, if you ask me.
Right. With some degree, right, you can just do them all the time. There's really nothing stopping you at engaging in them. All the time you can go.
It's mentally exhaustive from the moment that you wake up to the time that you're able to fall asleep. Your mind is on. And if you have ever endured exam week, final exam week, while you were in school, having mental compulsion is literally like being on exam week. Just every week is exam week.
With usual compulsions, I understand you can get the patient to stop engaging in them, but how do you get someone to stop engaging in mental compulsions?
It is very, very challenging. And this is where a lot of patients have challenges with their therapist. If you have a therapist who is not experienced in treating pure O, then all they're going to do is expose you to the obsession. So they might expose you to, you're not a good person, right? Because if your question is, am I a good person? Then the exposure would be exposing you to the opposite. You're not a good person. However, unless the response prevention is put into place, so you know ERP stands for exposure and response prevention, the two has to work together. Unless your therapist is assigning tasks to prevent you from engaging in those mental undoing, in the mental compulsions, then you're still feeding into that cycle of OCD. So it's actually fruitless to be engaging in the exposure. In order to minimize the mental compulsions, it means you have to put in 10 times the effort that the person with overt compulsions has. Because overt compulsions, you can sit on your hands, right? You can tie yourself up and not be able to move to do the checking, do the washing, do the organizing. The problem with mental compulsions is that it occurs mentally. And we all know if you try not to think of something, don't think of that yellow duck, what do you end up doing?
Thinking of the duck.
Purposely thinking of the duck, right? So one of the goals for people with mental compulsions, and especially pure O, is to be able to accept and tolerate that uncertainty. That is the true goal, because the reality is there is no certainty in life. So for the person with pure O, the goal is to accept that you might be a good person. You might not. You might be a moral person. You might not. You might have this. You might not. It's leaving that philosophical question unanswered and being okay with not knowing rather than trying to gain certainty.
So the idea is you have to become comfortable with the idea of uncertainty.
Yes. I mean, at the end of the day, that is the whole purpose, the whole goal for any OCD treatment, right? Is to be, I wouldn't say to be comfortable. You're really not comfortable. However, you can tolerate it, right? So being able to tolerate that there is no certainty, whether it's, is my house going to burn up in flames, or am I a pedophile, or is having my closet in all the wrong order going to give me bad luck? Any of those questions, the goal is to be okay with not knowing.
Real quick then, how does someone who has this, right, when you say they need to become more accepting of uncertainty, how would one sort of do that? What's the sort of the action step that they need to do?
The first is to be mindfully present in the moment, right? I don't know if we've discussed about mindfulness. If not, that might be a future episode. So mindfulness is your ability to just be in this present moment. And that takes a lot of training. And that's a whole spiel of tools that you would have to learn. The other part is being able to identify when you are engaging in mental acts in order to feel better. So anytime you are trying to answer those philosophical questions with more questions, you're engaging in a compulsion, and you have to redirect your attention onto something that is productive rather than these unproductive questions.
Fair enough. Now, last thing is, we're going to get into generalized anxiety disorder and worry in a future episode. But for the time being, how would you differentiate a pure O, or someone who has this question going on in their head, as opposed to someone who is a worrier?
A person who is worrier, as in someone with generalized anxiety disorder, worries about everyday things. So they might worry about their finances. They might worry about their kids. They're worried about their health. They're worried about their spouse. They're worried about their jobs. And these are realistic worries, right? Which may keep them up at night, which might be the first thing that they worry about upon waking. However, it's not about one specific question. It's not about one specific concern. Most people with pure O, their worries are focused on one specific idea. And all of the ruminative questions that they ask, all of those debates that they come up with, surround that one specific topic,
okay,
which is why it's focused rather than generalized, as in generalized anxiety disorder.
Okay, so to go back to my question we asked at the beginning of the episode, can you have OCD without the C? The answer would be,
technically, no.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Yip.
You're welcome. Thank you, Noah.
Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life Podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at thestresslesslifepodcast.com. Please write to us with questions and comments at podcast@thestresslesslife.com. Until next time, stay stressless.